This is Audible.
Between These Sheets. Written by Devin McCormick. Narrated by Michael Pauly. Chapter 1. Jay.
You want to start something?
Tyler asks. You already started it, I say, balling my hands into fists and stepping toward him. I've only been here a few days, but this guy's been grating on my nerves ever since I began working at the factory. He's another packing associate, but for some reason, he thinks he's superior because he has a little seniority. I was fine with the attitude and him calling me Blue Jay to get on my nerves, but when he tripped me as I was heading to the loading dock, I was finished being cordial. Glass is scattered across the floor beside the box I dropped. He could have seriously injured me.
It was an accident, man, he says. Not my fault you don't know how to use your goddamn feet.
That's it. I spring forward, fists flying. His jaw tenses, and he comes at me, rage in his eyes. This is what he wanted. This is what he fucking asked for. But he's gonna wish he hadn't when I break his nose. I'm about to lay into him, when a force hits my shoulder and knocks me to the side. I turn to the guy who pushed me and punch. The blow knocks him to the ground. When I see who it is, I'm horrified. It's my boss, Reese Klein. The guy who interviewed me less than 2 weeks ago. The guy I practically begged to give me the position. The right leg of his jeans is hiked up, revealing a dark gray metal rod. A prosthetic, I assume. Some of the guys in the office had mentioned he'd been in Iraq. The way he limped slightly, I assumed he'd been shot. No one said anything about him missing a fucking leg. Shit. His face bright red, his eyes on me. I don't see the friendly man who greeted me when I first got here. I see something darker. Like I flipped a switch, and now I'm facing off with the Hulk. He rises to his feet. Slowly. Steadily. And I back up against the wall. Normally, I'd be game for challenging him. But the moment I saw his leg and the expression on his face, my guilt dissolved all my defensiveness. I want to tell him I'm sorry, but the words are stuck in my throat. He approaches me, but stops before reaching me, breathing heavily, his hands trembling beside him.
My office in 15 minutes, no sooner, no later.
His words are like bullets, short, quick, frightening. He walks away, leaving me in the middle of the small audience that's collected around me during the commotion.
Clean it up, Tyler,
he calls over his shoulder, and I notice his limp more than I usually do, now understanding the reason for it. The guys aren't even looking at me, not even Tyler, who I figured would be thrilled about me getting into trouble. We crossed a line with Reese, and I doubt that's something he's proud of. From what I know, the guys respect Reese. He's on the level with them, and he's a fair supervisor. Doesn't treat us like we're inferior, doesn't condescend. It's hard as fuck to find a boss like him in this line of work. Typically, guys on the floor are talked down to by their superiors, like we're too stupid to know the sky is blue. Reminds me of being a kid. Of my asshole father shouting at me like I was a fucking nothing. Tyler heads off to get shit to clean up the mess, while I continue with my work. My co-worker William had dropped one of the packages off the forklift when he was moving them onto the loading dock, so I was helping him clean up the mess when I had my run-in with Tyler. I continue helping William, dreading this meeting with Reese. I keep my clock on the warehouse clock uneasily. It's taking four fucking ever for 15 minutes to pass. After how I humiliated him in front of the whole warehouse, he's gonna fire me. That's all he can do. Guys like Reese have egos, big ones, and they won't tolerate insubordination. Or even worse, humiliation. I've been in town less than a month. I thought I was lucky to have found a new job as fast as I did, and now I'm gonna have to pack up and head out. Doesn't feel fair. But I'm the only one I can blame for this.
It was one thing to lose my temper with Tyler. It was another to turn it on the guy who was friendly enough to give me a break after he called one of my references and discovered I'd lost my job because of my temper.
One shot, he told me. That's all you have. Got it?
Shot blown. I won't be groveling for my job. If he wants to get rid of me, I won't humiliate myself over mediocre work at a glass bottle factory. I can get a crap job like this in any town. As the clock reaches the 10-minute mark, the suspense itches at me like a rash. Finally, the time comes, and I head to his office. He's sitting at his desk. The cement walls behind him are lined with bookshelves and a few filing cabinets. He keeps his office clean, his face stern. He rests a trembling hand on the table.
Close the door,
he says as I enter. I obey and take a seat in front of his desk as I did when we had our first interview. His bright blue eyes sparkle in the room's fluorescent lights, which cast sharp shadows beneath his cheeks. His tense jaw is covered in a dirty blonde beard that matches the tufts of his bangs, which wave to the side. His massive biceps shape the sleeves of his short-sleeved button-up. He's hot. The kind of guy I wouldn't mind rolling around in the sack with after a few drinks. The sort of guy I'd want to fuck. Hell, I'd let him inside me. Let him take me. Make me feel good. If only because there aren't enough moments like that in my life. His gaze doesn't waver as I sit before him. He glares at me like he's 2 seconds from hopping up and beating the crap out of me for the spectacle I made of him in front of all his employees.
Do you not understand the concept of one shot?
He asks. This is the part where I'm supposed to defend myself, tell him that Tyler started it, go into the same long-ass monologue I would have gone into in the principal's office when I was a kid. But all I can think of is how much I've disappointed him. I don't know why that even matters. I guess because there are a few guys who would have hired me after they found out from one of my previous employers that I was a troublemaker. But hell, no one ever checks my references for work like this. So I wasn't thinking he'd call anyone. As a packaging associate, you either can or can't do the job. It doesn't matter what sort of trouble you might have gotten into in the past. The fact that Reese took some time out of his day in the hiring process makes me respect him more. A shame this is the last day I'll be working with him.
Are you just going to sit there and stare at me?
He asks. His hand still noticeably shakes on the desktop. And as I gaze at it a little too long, he pulls it back and slides it under the table, never taking his eyes off mine.
Mr. Klein, I'm sorry for pushing you, I say.
I'm surprised by the sincerity in my own words. Typically, I'd be a dick, maybe offer some factitious apology to piss him off even more. But I didn't mean to show every guy in the warehouse his fake leg. I didn't mean to expose his vulnerability. I wouldn't want that for myself or anyone else, although that must be one of only a few vulnerabilities a guy who's built like a pro wrestler has to worry about. Reese presses his tongue against his cheek. His gaze trails off, as if he's lost in deep thought about something. I can't imagine what. He just needs to tell me I'm fired and to grab my things out of my locker. Get the hell out of here. I can pack my bags in the room I'm renting and get the fuck out of town in no time. Move on like I always do. Those blue eyes are on me again.
I've seen how Tyler's been treating you all week. Yeah, he's been a bit of a dick.
He's gonna be that way because I technically brought you in to handle some things that he couldn't. He was shitty.
But I don't need you making things worse during a tricky situation. That's what I'm here for. The guys give you crap, you come to me. My job is to take care of that.
Wait, is he seriously letting me off the hook? I'm so thrown by his words, I can't even think straight. But as soon as I regain my composure, I say, I don't need anyone protecting me from schoolyard bullies. I can take care of myself.
If they're going to act like schoolyard bullies, then I'll discipline them like schoolyard bullies. That's my job,
not yours.
The feeling of having an ally eases my tension.
I get you throwing punches or making a scene again? He adds. I'll have your job. Got it?
I nod. Yes, sir. It's Reese.
Not sir, he says through his teeth.
I'm too stunned to say anything else.
This can't be happening.
Reese is the only boss I've ever had who would have tolerated that kind of behavior, especially when it resulted in such a humiliating incident.
Now get out of here and finish your shift, okay?
Chapter 2 Reese.
I'm still shaking from when Jay knocked me down. I was on my way to the loading dock when I saw him and Tyler getting into it. I figured I'd just grab him, get his attention. But then he turned on me, and the moment his fist made contact with my face, I was transported back into the heat of battle. It was a good thing he knocked me down, because if I hadn't had that time standing up to regain my bearings, I'm not sure what I would have done to him. With my adrenaline high and my body convinced I was facing an enemy, I could have laid a few blows to his head, maybe severely injured him. I haven't had an episode like that in a long time. I still have the usual ones. I'll never be totally fine, but I don't normally lose it. I might feel the impulse. Every muscle in my body might urge me to spring to life and kick some ass as every thought in my brain echoes the sentiment demanding I act, but I've learned how to soothe those thoughts. At least enough that I'm not afraid I'm going apeshit on an employee. Today was close. Too close. I've already been on edge recently. I'm hanging onto my sanity by a thread. And if I'd done something to Jay, hurt him in any way, I never would have forgiven myself. Not just because I'd lose my job and potentially have to deal with a lawsuit, but because it would mean that all this work, every group session, every therapy appointment, every month I spent working to find the right cocktail of pills would have meant shit. I've worked too hard to get to this point. Too hard to live a somewhat normal life, even when the thoughts and emotions feel like they're too much to handle. Even when they overtake me to the point where I'm not sure I'll make it through the day. I fought in the field. And now I fight in my mind. It's a battle I'll never win, and experiences like what just happened in the warehouse remind me of that. When Jay leaves my office to return to his shift, I rise from my chair, adrenaline coursing through my veins. I'm waiting for this to pass, for my nerves to settle, but they're still overexcited, raging, screaming at me to run for my life, reminding me that if I'm not shooting, then I might wind up shot. A weight presses down on my chest, making it difficult for me to breathe. Heat fills my cheeks, and the way my thoughts swirl, it seems like if I don't calm down soon, I might throw up. I pace around the room, using every mental exercise I can conjure up to soothe myself, but I'm trapped in this spell. The best thing to do in moments like these is to surrender. So I lock my door and curl into a ball in the corner of the room. I need a few minutes. Need to remember that as much as it feels like these thoughts will destroy me, it'll pass like it always does. Easier said than done. I grip onto my leg. No. My prosthesis. Sometimes I forget what it is, what I'm missing, what I can never get back. I head out of the factory and see a few of the employees still lingering as they wait for rides, most from their spouses, some from their parents. I'm still rattled from the experience with Jay, but at least the tension and the physical discomfort has settled. I noted the experience in an app on my phone, so I can bring it up with Laura, my therapist. One I pay for myself since the VA's resources are shit. Fortunately,
The factory has an incredible insurance plan that allows me to see Laura, my psychiatrist, and my prosthetist. Painful and frustrating as this can get, I'm one of the lucky ones. Despite how the terrors haunt me and how bad it can get, it's manageable enough that I can live some semblance of a normal life, enough that I can hide episodes from my employees, and I can function well enough with the job. Something I knew I needed. Something I desperately fought for, not just because I need the money, but because I need my fucking sanity. At least when I'm busy, I can distract myself from the thoughts and sensations that bombard me on a regular basis. On my way to my car, I see Jay standing before the open hood of his Honda Civic, which is scratched up and has a few dents in it. I figure it's an apt representation of where he's at in life. I should breeze past him and head home. I'm too on edge. It's too easy for me to be triggered right now. But as he curses under his breath, I shift my direction toward him. I know what's drawing me. His guardedness. His attitude. They remind me of my friend. And as much as I know that's liable to make what I'm experiencing even worse, I can't resist this impulse that pulls me to him. He's so preoccupied he doesn't see me coming. His dark hair is a mess, sweat and dust covers his face from the work in the warehouse. We all get a little film of crud on ourselves from being in there all day. He's wearing jeans and a t-shirt. When I reach the truck, he turns to me, his expression wide with confusion, just like when he was looking at me in the warehouse after he pushed me down and exposed my leg for everyone to see. Just thinking about that moment pains me. To be humiliated like that in front of my guys is a serious bruise to my ego. They know about the leg, though. They knew I was injured in the war. It's not something I've kept secret. Something like that's hard to hide because of my limp. But even though they know, I don't need them to be reminded of my faults, my weaknesses, my vulnerabilities. I'm their boss, not their friend. "Oh, hey, Mr. Klein," he says, his brown eye shifting between me and the inside of his hood. "Car troubles?" I ask, inspecting the inside. He bites his lip and avoids my gaze. "You mind if I take a look?" I ask. He steps away, wiping his hands on his already dirty jeans. "Sure," he says. I inspect the inside before I try to start the engine. "Looks like you got a dead battery on your hands," I say as I step out of the driver's side and approach him. "Fuck," he says. And I can see in his expression and in his rage that he has contempt for the whole universe. Like it has conspired against him like this. He doesn't know shit about how horrible and cruel this world can be. Some of the guys start laughing on the other side of the lot. "Motherfuckers," Jay says as he notices them. He starts their way, but I snatch his arm, gripping onto his thick bicep in the leather jacket he's wearing. I can't help but immediately imagine pulling him aside in my office and roughing him up a bit, wiping that frustrated look off his face and replacing it with one of pure joy. "Did you already forget what I fucking told you?" I ask, shaking the fantasy from my thoughts, although it's not that easy to get rid of. "They're just loving this," he says, his expression filled with confusion and rage. "I don't need you to start another scene right now, okay? Just be glad I don't have any other appendages you can share with the world." His rage shifts to worry and guilt in an instant. "Dude, I'm sorry about that. I really didn't. I was just trying to make light of it. Don't get weird on me, okay?" He nods. "Yes, sir." "I get that you want to be polite and all, but like I keep telling you, you can just call me Reese." I don't like hearing the sort of "yes, sirs" that were so common when I was in the service. Even worse is being called by my last name, since that's what people were always shouting at me when we were in the thick of it, scrambling for our lives. Wondering if the guns being fired around us would be the ones that finally took us out. "Yes, Reese," he says. It's like training a goddamn robot. I close the hood of his car. "Just act cool, and I'll drive you home." I start for my car, but then turn back around. He hasn't moved. He stands there, staring at me, as if he's surprised by something.
"You fucking coming?" I ask him.
"You serious?"
Well, part of that sounded like a joke.
"Sorry, I'm just... never mind."
I lead him to my car. We hop in. He notices how I tuck the prosthesis on my right leg under my left leg to drive. I'm not thrilled about him seeing me like this. But he already knows, so what the fuck do I have to hide? We head on to the main road. He says he's staying off Moreland in East Atlanta, which is on the way to my house in Grant Park, so I won't have an issue dropping him off. We have a 20-minute drive before we get to his place, so I keep my country music turned up, Travis Tritt, hoping I won't have to worry about making conversation with him.
"I hear you were in Iraq,"
Jay says.
"Just because you saw my leg doesn't mean you have to chat with me about it."
"I'm sorry, I just... if I'd known,
wouldn't have changed how you lost it today."
He silences and waits a few minutes before saying, Look, Tyler's just been kind of a dick, and that's why I..."
"You let me worry about Tyler. It's none of your business anymore. My only suggestion to you is to not make any more enemies."
"Easier said than done. Seems like that's all I ever make."
I'm not surprised. The guy clearly has a chip on his shoulder.
"It'll serve you to remember that."
"What?"
"I'm just saying. If you make enemies everywhere you go, it's probably not because there's a problem with everywhere you go."
"You saying Tyler was right?"
"Nope. Everyone has a way with dealing with shit like that, but most people don't resort to flipping the fuck out is all I'm saying."
Jay looks like he's about to start a fight with me over it, so I say, "That was some friendly advice from a boss to his employee, so I suggest you keep your lips sealed and act appreciative of it."
He's quiet again, though I suspect he's less than appreciative of my suggestion. I don't care. From what I can tell, he's trouble, and that's not what we need at the factory. If he doesn't straighten up, he's getting the fucking boot. I won't stand for his fucking attitude. Although, his attitude, his uneasiness, those are the things that remind me of Caleb. Ever since he interviewed, he reminded me of my bunkmate, my best friend in the whole goddamn world. And despite how careful I'm trying to be, I know that's why I'm really helping him.
Chapter 3. Jay. I don't know what Reese said to Tyler, but it's been a week since the incident, and Tyler hasn't teased me or been an asshole. But as friendly as Reese was the other day, he hasn't gone out of his way to be any nicer to me. Greets me like he would any of the other guys, with a nod and not so much as a friendly smirk. I can see why everyone falls into line under this guy. He's intimidating as hell. When I was in the car with him, and he was basically saying I brought this kind of shit on myself, I wanted to argue with him, but I didn't want to stir his rage again. I saw what that looked like, and it freaked me the hell out. I'm one to get angry. I'll explode during a situation like the one with Tyler. What happened to Reese is so far beyond that. It wasn't just like he lost his mind. It was like he knew he had, and wasn't sure he could control himself. I sit by myself at a table in the break room, taking 15 minutes to grab a drink from the vending machine. With my earbuds in, I listen to an old Louis C.K. special. I have a bunch of comedy specials downloaded on my phone that I like to listen to. Richard Pryor, George Carlin, Joan Rivers, Rita Rudner. Reese walks in, looking particularly agitated as he fidgets about. He's rattled, as though something's just happened to him. He's prepping for a major inventory audit next week. He's been sticking around after hours for the past few days, pulling all-nighters, and it's weighing him down. His beard appears a little rougher than usual, more uneven, like he needs a trim. He heads to the vending machine and pops a dollar in before pressing a button. There's a thud as a snack hits the bottom of the machine. He doesn't look at me as he kneels down and retrieves a Snickers bar.
Not the healthiest of choices. But considering I'm planning to heat a package of bola noodles in the microwave for lunch, who am I to judge? Some guys pass outside the doorway. The last guy has a cart piled with long sheets of metal. They're the repairmen who came in to fix one of the annealing machines that broke down on the other side of the factory. I'm guessing they're pulling the sheets from storage to make repairs. Another task that's been agitating Reese since corporate's having a fit about how we're behind on our orders. The repairman pushing the cart keys something in on his phone, not paying much attention. One of the sheets looks like it's about to slide free. I consider warning the guy, but I don't want to call him out in front of the boss. No need to get him into any trouble over something stupid. Worst case scenario is he loses it and has to put it back on. My prediction comes true after he passes the doorway and a loud clang echoes through the hall, the metal against the concrete floor sounding like a fucking gun going off. It shocks me. But then Reese slips behind the vending machine, disappearing out of sight. I can't help but chuckle. Oh, wow. What a fucking scaredy cat. My laugh is soft, and I wait for him to step out and admit he was a fucking pansy about something pretty stupid. But he doesn't come out. What the fuck is he doing? I rise from my chair and approach him, pulling my earbuds out and sliding them into my pocket. He's huddled in a fetal position, shaking, trembling. It only takes me a moment before the obvious realization hits me. This is about a lot more than some dumb fucking noise. Post-traumatic stress disorder. I've seen it in movies and shit, even known a few guys who've had these kinds of reactions to loud sounds after they served in the army. I've seen guys agitated, but not like this. A voice comes from outside.
Holy shit!
It's Tyler. I hear a few guys chuckle in the hallway. Judging by the way their voices amplify, they're on their way to the break room. Makes sense, since they're in the first round of guys to take lunch. I'm hardly thinking my actions through as I close the door and turn the lock.
Hey! What the fuck?
Tyler says as he rattles the door handle from the other side.
Fucking douchebag!
I turn to Reese, who's still shaking, not moving. A loud knock comes from the other side, which I know sure as fuck can't be helping Reese.
You can't come in here, I say. What the fuck do you mean?
I scan my stupid brain for any excuse that might remotely make sense.
Reese told me not to let anyone in the room. I was a dumbass and broke some bottles in here when I was coming to grab a drink, okay? He doesn't want anyone to come in until he comes back with some shit to clean it up with.
You're just accident-prone as shit, aren't you?
Tyler asks, amusement in his tone. Normally, I would be upset that he's referring to when he was a dick and tripped me. But right now, my mind is only on the fact that he needs to go the fuck away so Reese won't have to deal with another embarrassing situation. Maybe this'll make up for that dumb shit move I pulled last week. Tyler and his buds groan, and their voices trail off as they move farther and farther from the door. I turn back to Reese. His head shifts slightly back and forth. I approach him and kneel so I'm at his level. I'm cautious. I don't want him to snap, but he needs someone here for him, and I want him to know he can trust me with this.
Reese, I say, fucking leave,
he says through gritted teeth, his gaze straight ahead of him. He looks like he's concentrating very hard on something, struggling to concentrate even. It's a harsh reaction considering I just saved his ass from being seen by those assholes. But I get why he wants me out of here. I'm not leaving you like this. He moves his lips like he's trying to say something, but nothing comes out. Dude, I'm staying here until this passes, I add. If I leave, any of the other guys can come in here. Is that what you want? He closes his eyes, muttering to himself. I feel like crap. Wish there was something I could do to help him. Not just because he's tortured by whatever the fuck memory he's experiencing from Iraq, but because I know what it's like to feel embarrassed, to be ashamed and want everyone in the world to leave me the fuck alone. I try to think of something to say, but everything that comes to mind seems trite, like it'll just annoy him more than anything else. The last thing he needs right now is a series of clichés to pull him out of his very real pain. Tears rush from his eyes, down his cheeks. I turn away. I'm just going to come over here and not look at you, okay? I'll just keep guard, and you can do whatever you need to do. I head to the table, facing the wall. He breathes intensely, like it's nearly impossible for him to get air in. Do I need to call an ambulance? I ask. I wait. If he can't respond, maybe that's what I need to do. I reach into my pocket and retrieve my phone. No, he says in a deep, guttural voice that keeps me from doubting his sincerity. Judging by his tone, if I call anyone, the moment he returns to his usual self, he'll kick my fucking ass, and I'll be out on the streets without the sort of consideration he gave me the other day. I'll stop talking. Anything else is going to annoy him, I figure. I just hope no one else swings by and disturbs him. The sounds he makes intensify from heavy breathing to what sounds like weeping and then whimpering. I shouldn't be here for this. Shouldn't be witnessing it. He deserves a moment to recover on his own. Not 5 minutes pass before the sounds settle, and I hear him moving around. I spin back around. He climbs to his feet and rests against the vending machine, tucking his face close to it. You can get out now, he says, his voice deep as ever. Severe. He doesn't sound appreciative. He sounds pissed. Like there was a way to handle this, and I fucked it up royally. I was just trying to help, I say quickly, but he points to the door. I hurry out. Better this way. I don't want to see him like this. And at least now I know he's fine. I feel like crap knowing that he can never look at me the same way again. First I exposed his leg. Now this. Reese obviously isn't the kind of guy who likes people to see him weak or in pain, and having a fucking PTSD episode right in front of me sure covers that. I head back to work, and some of the guys start giving me shit about how long I was gone, but I say that Reese had me cleaning up my mess. I don't give a shit about saving my own ass, but I'm glad I could save Reese's.
Chapter 4 Reese.
I can't believe he saw me like that. For the past 2 years, I've done so well. I was nervous as fuck about even taking this supervisor position because when I first started working here, the noises freaked me the fuck out, and a factory is such a goddamn noisy place. But I didn't have any work experience outside the military training. This and construction were really the only options I had available to me. My only shots at creating a life for myself. Thanks to the meds and my work with Laura, I've gotten good at getting by day to day. The noises still freak me out, but few have transported me like the one that came from the hall today. One that evoked memories of me alongside my crew, dressed in full combat gear as we raced through the smoldering heat. The sounds of gunshots fired all around us as we watched a few guys collapse onto the ground and eat dirt-covered earth, their bodies going limp. I'm better at handling everyday tasks now, but that episode reminds me of what I already know. I'm always a moment away from being back where I started, struggling to control the raging thoughts that are far beyond my control, falling prey to the sensations that overtake my body and paralyze me. I already knew why this one affected me so much. I haven't had much sleep the past few days. I knew I needed more rest. But it's not easy for a guy who never wants to sleep. A guy who needs Ambien and NyQuil so his mind will shut down. I don't have the nightmares like I used to.
but my lingering fear of them makes it easy for me to stay up. Once again, I'm reminded of why I need to sleep. Getting on edge like I've been for this inventory audit puts me at a greater risk of an episode. I think Jay is partially responsible for them, too. From his first interview, he reminded me of Caleb. How closed off he was. How he couldn't look me in the eyes. A guy who doesn't trust anyone. The sort of guy I'd have to earn trust from. The memory he awakened is one of the reasons that even when the guy at his last job told me not to hire him, I went against my better judgment and gave him a shot. Because even though Caleb had a short temper, he was a hard worker and a great man. I want to believe the same thing is true of Jay. That I'm not just desperately trying to keep Caleb's memory alive. But part of the similarity triggers those things that I work to bury within me every day. And it's even worse now that he knows about my issues. The other guys have seen me act weird, but I've always been able to sneak away before losing it. Even with loud noises, I've been cognizant enough to get the fuck away from everyone to have my breakdowns, panic attacks mainly. And the other guys are usually so unaware of what's going on or where I'm at that I don't have to worry about them bothering me in a moment of weakness. I head out of the freight elevator and walk into the main part of the warehouse, where I see Jay securing some shipments with plastic wrap and tape. I stand tall, even though I want to curl back up like I did earlier. Because seeing him takes me back to that moment in the break room. As he spots me, he stops what he's doing and runs his hand through his dark hair. He looks worried about me, which just pisses me off even more. I don't need his pity. I'm a fucking grown man. I've been to fucking war, which is more than this whiny-ass entitled kid can say. I've been getting help for 8 years, so I sure as fuck know I can control it. No. Not control it. Manage it. Sympathetic as he acted, as he looks, I imagine him getting a kick out of letting the other guys know he was there for me when I burst into tears like a wuss. Even though everything about his expression suggests he wouldn't do that, I don't trust him. I try to remind myself that this paranoia I have about him exposing me is just part of the feelings that overtook me earlier, but it doesn't make me feel any better or any more trusting of him. My rage toward him mixes with my awareness of how fucking hot he is. And I imagine taking all this frustration out on him in the sack, taking his body, and making him beg for me to come inside him, dominating him so that he knows I'm not just the weak thing he saw me as earlier. He returns his attention to his work, wrapping up the pallet of crated bottles. I approach William, who sits on the forklift, rifling through a few sheets on his clipboard. I don't need to talk to him, but I want Jay to see I'm perfectly capable of handling my job. I can do this. Although I wonder if I'm proving it to him or to myself. I chat with William about some inventory issues I'm trying to sort out, some misplaced equipment, and a couple of shipments we're rescheduling because of the damaged annealing machine. I feel Jay's gaze on me, and I'm sure he notices how I can't keep my clipboard from shaking. He must know it's about my episode, and not just for me being tired as fuck. Which I am, too. I have to push through this like I learned in therapy. I run through a series of mantras, reminding myself I'm not in imminent danger. But it doesn't keep my palms from sweating. God damn it. I've avoided Jay for the past few days, hoping we could both pretend my episode in the break room didn't happen, but he keeps looking at me. I can tell he wants to talk about it, and that's the last thing I want. Not just with him, but with anyone. Laura says the more I discuss it, the less it'll feel like I'm carrying around this burden by myself. Helpful as working with her has been, though, there are some things I'm not ready to deal with. Some things I haven't even talked to her about because they leave me feeling so empty and horrible that they remind me that maybe it's not even worth it to push through. I stock supplies in the main storage closet, where Jay grabs handfuls of nails from a box and puts them into a plastic bucket. He'll be working on packing the shipments that are going out tomorrow. I figured this would be like a normal day, where he grabbed a shit and moved on. Instead, he asks, "How's it going?" He's itching to talk about it.
"Going good, Jay," I say, shoving a couple of boxes of screws onto the shelf as I act like I don't give a damn. "How about you?"
He doesn't move. Why can't he just forget about what happened and let us both move on with our lives? I haven't had a serious episode like that in almost a year. It isn't fair that he's caught me in two of the weakest moments I've had in a very long time. He walks to the door, and I figure I'm in the clear, until he turns back around and asks, "Are we just never discussing what happened the other day?" Tension rises within me, beads of sweat collect on my forehead. There's nothing to talk about. "I think I deserve to know what happened, and that you're actually getting help." His words sound sincere, but there's this part of me that feels like he just wants to know so that he can get inside my head, know my weaknesses and vulnerabilities. To what end, I'm not sure. I can't let him in. Can't let him get to me. "I have help. Been working on this for a long time. That was a rare incident. I was just tired." "Maybe you need to take some time off. You've been working nonstop for the past few days." "Like I said, been handling this for a long time. I know when I need to take time off. Don't need some newbie who doesn't know anything about me or my life coming in and telling me how to run things." "I'm not doing that. Just, well, if you need to talk to someone over some beers or whatever, I'm here." I don't think he could have found a more awkward way of saying that if he'd tried. I didn't take him for the kind of guy who would have reached out to help me. Closed off. Quiet. Aggressive as fuck to anyone who pisses him off. Just like Caleb, who put up a strong front but was the most amazing guy I've ever known. The kind of guy who would have given a friend both his kidneys if they'd needed them. If Jay would show this side of himself to the other guys, they wouldn't give him nearly as much shit as they do. But the only reason he's bugging me about this is because he sees me as this feeble guy who needs assistance. I don't need his help. I don't need anyone's help. I can do this by myself. "I'm fine, but thanks." My words are curt, almost mean, considering he was being generous with his offer. But he must understand that we have a working relationship. And that's it. Although I can't help but think that it'd be nice if I could have more than that. Not just with the guys at work, but anyone. It reminds me of a time when I could make friends, hang with them after work. A time when I was carefree. No one ever invites me to anything anymore. I just sit alone in my house, dreading the world. Dreading having to come here every day. Laura's always encouraging me to get out, but I never do. He turns to the hall.
"Hey, Jay," I say.
He spins around, and I look right at him for the first time since the other day. He appears shocked by it.
"A drink would be nice. After work." What the fuck am I doing?
Chapter 5. Jay.
I can't believe he took me up on my offer. I'm glad he did. But also scared as fuck. He's been so quiet the past few days, I figured he'd never look me in the eyes again. I tried to forget about the incident and ignore him the way he was ignoring me. But I couldn't. Something about seeing a full-grown man fall apart like that. Knowing he was in pain. Struggling. Made me feel for the guy. First thing I did after I got home the day it happened was Google the crap out of post-traumatic stress disorder. I knew about it in the way most people do, heard about it, seen it depicted on TV and in movies. I've known other guys who have had episodes, but I've never seen one that dramatic before. Now that I know about his issue, I feel a little protective of him. When I hear the guys talking shit about the boss man, it puts me more on edge than it usually would. Makes me feel like getting in their faces and defending him. They don't know his life or what he's been through. But then again, neither do I. I wonder if I'm defending his weakness or my own. Whatever it is, I just kept finding myself itching to talk to him. I know what it's like to feel all alone in the world, to be afraid of shit, to want to break down and cry sometimes. Granted, that time in the break room is the only time I've felt anything close to a connection with Reese. But now that I know it's there, I'm drawn to him. Want to know more about him. I feel like we carry his secret about that day together, like we're bonded in some strange way because of it. Maybe I'm wrong, and having a drink with him will help me realize that. Maybe I can get him and what happened out of my head once we talk about it. I sit in the bar, waiting for him to arrive. We agreed to meet at this place in East Atlanta. He had to finish up some shit at work first, so I figured I'd get a few rounds in me in the meantime. I'm on my third when he walks in, that same stoic expression on his face, the one he's always made in the brief time I've known him. But since his episode in the break room, it's gotten even more intense. Seems like he's keeping his defenses up even more now. He approaches, offers a polite hey, and sits in the stool beside me, keeping his eye on me in his periphery. He angles himself toward the door and checks over his shoulder at a couple of guys who sit in a booth in the corner of the bar. The bartender swings by and takes his order. After he gets his Bud Light, he takes a sip and sets it on the bar. Now I'm left wondering what the fuck we're going to talk about. This isn't exactly the way to discuss PTSD, but I figure I'll let him direct the conversation.
I really am fine, he says. Sincere as his words sound, I can't help but question them. Okay, I say. I was deployed for about 12 months back in 2003 when they needed guys for Iraq. I just wasn't the same when I got back. 6 months went by, and it was really bad. It took me about 5 more years before I started to get treatment. At first, I didn't understand what was happening to me, but a lot of my buddies were going through the same thing, struggling even worse than I was. Fortunately, they knew more about it at that time than in previous wars, and I figured I'd get on top of it. Considering how this shit hits people, I guess you could say I'm one of the lucky ones. He snickers, as if calling himself lucky seems particularly amusing. He takes a swig of his beer, and I take one of mine. I've been getting treatment for about 8 years now, he continues. So just get it through your head that I know what I'm doing. Yeah, I should have gotten more rest when the inventory was happening, I knew that. Sometimes I go too hard. But at the end of the day, I got it under control. By got it under control, you mean like a shrink and stuff? An arsenal of people to help me out. But I don't need this getting around work, okay? That's why I wanted to meet you out here, because if I find out you're spreading this shit around the factory, making my guys worry about my ability to do my job, that's gonna piss me off. I gave you a break, and I'm just asking you to show me the same respect. They know I've been to war. They know I lost my fucking leg because of it. They know I act a little screwy every once in a while. I'd like to keep them from knowing any more than that. The way he says it, in a deep, guttural voice. He sounds like he'll rip off my head if I start spreading rumors about him. I would never do anything like that. Speaking of the guys, though, this, meeting here isn't, like, against policy or anything, right?
Do you think I'd be here if it was?
He takes another sip before asking,
"So what's your story, kid?"
I'm irritated by him calling me kid. "I can't be that much younger than you."
"I'm 33, Reese says.
27.
"You're a kid, get over it. Story?"
"Don't have much of a story."
"Oh, really?
The guy who almost attacked one of my guys doesn't have much of a story?" He tripped me.
"I saw that look in your eyes. I've seen that look in people's eyes before. But it's when they're fighting for their life, not when they're dealing with some asshole.
Now I feel like the vulnerable one. I didn't come here to talk about me. But it's fair for him to call me out on my shit when I called him out on his. I just got knocked around a lot as a kid. Don't see any reason to get knocked around as an adult, so I don't take a lot of shit anymore."
"Who knocked you around?"
His question is too personal. I want to ignore it. But again, I doubt he wanted me to know what I know about him, so I just blurted out. "My dad. Not just with me, but with my brother. I got out of there when I was 16. Stayed with my aunt and uncle for a bit until I could get out on my own. Been moving around ever since." I recall the shouting matches and fists flying as my older brother protected me. Thinking about him reminds me of those dead, lifeless eyes as he lay on the floor. Not moving. Not breathing. The day my brother, my best friend, was gone forever. It breaks my fucking heart, tears into my soul.
"In that interview, you said you came from New Orleans," Reese adds. "How long were you there?"
"About 4 weeks before I lost my job."
"Before you were fired from your job," he reminds me, "for being prone to lose your temper, as far as I was told.
Some of the guys at work found out I was on Grindr. Don't know which of the closeted fags figured it out, but after they did, they started calling me faggot and giving me a hard time about taking it up the ass. Guess they figured they could gang up on me without me putting up a fight. But they found out they were wrong when I kicked their fucking dumbasses. They underestimated me. People always underestimate me." He stares at me with cold eyes, distant eyes. I wonder what he's thinking. But then he says,
"Fair enough."
I drink a few more beers, but he continues to nurse his first. It's unusually quiet between us until we start chatting about stupid shit, the sorts of ins and outs that we have to deal with on a regular basis, nothing serious, as if we're trying to get as far away as possible from all the serious stuff we started talking about when we first got here. The bartender keeps swiping my empty bottles, so it's hard for me to keep track of where I'm at, but soon I realize just how buzzed I am. Feels good. Real good. "Holy shit," I say, "and it's only Thursday." He looks at me, an ease in his expression that I haven't seen since I started working at the factory. He smirks.
"Yeah, it might be a difficult night for you."
I see something else in his eyes. A look that I'm familiar with. It's a look I've seen on a lot of guys before. One of interest. An I wouldn't mind fucking you look. A big, hot machine like him must be a hell of a fuck in the bedroom. I imagine his beard pressed against my face as he takes me from behind, violently. Aggressively. It's been a couple of weeks since I've had a good lay. I nearly had a Grindr hookup last night, but the guy ended up flaking on me. A more sober thought crosses my mind. What am I thinking? Fucking around with the boss? That's a horrible idea. Am I fucking looking for a reason to have to find a new job already? I guess I should head home, I say. I need to get out of here before I make a stupid as fuck mistake.
His expression shifts to one of disappointment. Maybe I'm right about him wanting to fuck me. Could he need this release as much as I do? I run back through my memories of the guys in the warehouse talking about him, trying to remember if any of them ever mentioned him having a girlfriend. I can't remember anything like that. Could he really be interested? The more I consider the possibility, the stronger my desire becomes. My dick shifts in my pants as it stiffens. I'm gonna head to the bathroom and then head out too. But I'll wait with you for an Uber, he says. You're not in any position to drive right now. He rises, and I notice his own long, stiff cock in his jeans. I avoid looking at it so he won't realize I've seen it. Holy shit. Like, fuck. I don't know if I could even take something that big right now. But he's obviously as interested as I am.
Chapter 6 Reese. I head into the single bathroom and lock the door. Being in a bar reminds me of when I returned from Iraq, when my bud Mike and I would hit the bars together so he could pick up girls. Jay's really throwing them back, so I figure I'll give him another ride, but the stiff erection in my pants assures me the kind of ride I really want to give him. He's hot, I can't deny that, and now that the drinks have loosened him up a bit, he's easier to get along with. We were just talking about stupid work crap, but as I started looking at his face, really looking at him almost for the first time, his 5 o'clock shadow, his smooth baby flesh tainted by just a few tiny specks of freckles, his wide, dark eyes glistening in the bar light, I found my dick getting harder and harder. He's got a good frame on him. I've seen him in a sleeveless shirt when he works in the warehouse, his chest thick with muscles, his abs so defined I could see the definition creating grooves in his shirt. His physique, combined with the look he gave me back at the bar, one that suggested he'd be game to mess around, are why I'm horny as shit right now. I head to the sink, run the water, and splash some across my face. Just need to cool down. Need to wait for this fucking erection to pass and then head back out there. I didn't think my jeans were particularly tight until this moment. The Cialis I take to combat the libido issues I had when I first started taking my antidepressants makes it stone fucking hard when I get aroused. This is even worse than usual. I open the door. Jay leans on the wall across from the bathroom, his arms folded. He has a smirk on his face as his gaze drifts down to my erection. At this point, I don't feel the need to hide it. It's clear he isn't any straighter than me, and I'm not ashamed of being turned on by a hot guy. Is that a problem? I ask. He glances down at his pants. I follow his gaze to his own lengthy bulge. Saliva fills my mouth. He rushes forward and pushes me back into the bathroom, pressing his lips against mine. He skillfully closes the door with his foot and reaches back and locks it. I shouldn't want this. There are so many problems with doing this with an employee. But the kiss is so fucking intense that my body betrays my logic. I grab the back of his head instinctively and pull him close to me. His kiss is fire. Feels so fucking good. Before I know it, the small of my back slams against the sink. I feel the sting, but it won't distract me from this amazing sensation Jay stirred within me. I don't let anything bother me. I forget that I'm fucked up. I forget that I'm his boss. I forget all those things I carry around with me on a daily basis and just keep on kissing him. Relief. That's what it feels like. Something I haven't had in so fucking long. Something I need so desperately today. He slides his tongue between my lips, and I eagerly welcome it. He untucks my shirt and slides his hands up my belly, feeling his way across my abdomen. It's nice feeling someone appreciating my body. And I want to appreciate his. I push him back against the adjacent wall and pull his shirt up over his head, breaking our kiss just long enough to throw it behind me.
I want to be inside him. I want to fill him so that he can't maintain that scowl he always wears at work. I kiss my way down to his torso, carefully maneuvering until I'm on my knees, licking as I slide my hands down his sides. When my face is at his crotch, I run my nose along the length. Oh, he smells so good. Like a man. He unfastens his jeans and slides them down, along with the briefs he wears underneath. His cock springs forward. And now the pain in mine is even worse. I just need to rub one out. I bury my face in his trimmed pubes, smelling and licking, feeling his cock against the side of my face. I move my hands around, cupping his ass cheeks and squeezing. I'm his fucking boss. Finally, a logical thought enters my mind, along with a series of others that remind me just what a horrible idea this is. Fuck, I groan as I pry my hands from his ass cheeks and push them against the wall. I get back onto my feet and hurry out the door. I need to get the fuck out of here.
Where are you going?
He asks. The exit's to the left, just outside the bathroom. I push through the door and step onto the back porch of the bar. He follows me out as he tosses his shirt on, apparently having buttoned his jeans back up in the bathroom. I'm gonna go home. I say, I'll come with you. Like you said, I shouldn't be driving right now anyway. No, I can call you an Uber or something. He freezes, a stunned expression on his face, as if he doesn't understand what just happened. Where's the fun in that? He asks. I'm sorry I led you on like that, but I'm your boss. You're my employee. That's all there is to it. I'm starting down the stairs when I feel him grab my arm. I whirl around, my instincts reacting before I can even think it through. In a moment, I have my hand around his throat and I'm pinning him to a column at the top of the stairs. Shit, 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 sorry, he says. Fuck. I release him quickly, staring at my hand in horror, as if it was responsible for my actions rather than me. I'm sorry, I say. I just need to go. How does he manage to activate every trigger, every defense impulse within me? I grab my keys out of my pocket and start through the parking lot. My thoughts race. I can't believe what I just did.